frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
To Mad Science with crazy old hair Chaziz, and got Thomas on here today. I posted some links in the chat room over there. Actually, all four of these videos are related to each other. The first couple links are from a YouTuber, Geo Shoemaker. I hope you go over and check out his channel. He seems to do pretty good work, and I like the way he does his measurements on his experiments and everything. Pretty thorough as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, he did a video, kind of off of a video that I had done, and if he happens to be listening, I appreciate the shout out on your channel. It's pretty cool. And I'm really more excited about the fact that you actually took that idea and ran with it, because that's the whole key out here in the alternative energy community, is to take these ideas and, you know, instead of just shoving them off to the side, actually trying it out and seeing how, you know, how and what you can get to do with it. He took the hard drive motor. I put two video links of my own in the chat room, Must See 1 and Must See 2. Essentially what I did in these two videos was took an old computer hard drive motor and I spun it up with a Dremel and was able to produce high enough voltage to actually light up a 120-volt strand of LEDs. And whereas that might not sound like a whole lot, and I got a lot of criticism over how much energy that I had to actually force, you know, into that with the Dremel. You know, the Dremel run off 120 volts. So where they saw no gain, I saw an anomaly that I'd like to talk about here on this today's show. But anyway, Geo Shoemaker took the deal, and he not only tested it out on his side over there, but he also went a step further to make a turbine out of it, a hard drive turbine generator. And so if you got an opportunity to go over and take a peek at his video, maybe if you like his work, then you can subscribe to his channel. I'd appreciate that. You know, you got to support your alternative energy researchers. But he's also going to be working on a steam turbine version of it, I believe. And I would like to see a Tesla turbine version of it, where basically it's compressed air that's actually doing the work on a couple flat surfaces. If you haven't looked up Tesla turbines, you ought to check that out. It's a pretty neat concept that goes on there. But using all these different things that we've learned, like the Tesla turbine and this hard drive motor being actually a generator, using these things in conjunction with one another, it's not beyond the realms of possibility to actually build a small scale model, you know, on a zero budget that could prove out some theories that I've been talking about for quite a long time. The key that I wanted everybody to note about this doggone hard drive motor being used as a generator is not the fact that it's going to run your house or anything like that. What I want you to really take a peek at is if you ever have the opportunity to tear apart a hard drive motor and really get a good look inside, and then let me know what you see. Because, you know, I feel like, and I've been saying this for a long time, we use electricity completely wrong. We use energy wrong. You know, we basically right now, we take a brute force magnetic field and we spin it across some coils, and when the lines of flux from those magnetic fields, you know, alternating back and forth, gets electron flow going, which produces electricity and, you know, current and not all that. That's what, you know, basically how we're running our stuff. But the hard drive motor, something whole different going on there. Because if you look inside that hard drive motor, there is hardly any copper wire in there. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. And there's a little ring magnet inside there. Now, I've been argued with by a few of my friends that said that those ring magnets aren't as weak as they look. And granted, if you scale down to size, they are pretty strong, I'm sure, being, you know, down there on the size. But, you know, when I think of magnets, I think of like neodymium hard drive magnets that, you know, they'll fly across the room and stick to whatever metal they can grab a hold of. And some of the larger ones actually take your thumb off. If you get your thumb in between some of these magnets, they got a lot of attraction power. They'll slam your finger shut. And then some. But in my view, those are like really super weak magnets. And they're completely surrounding a little stator inside there that has very little copper wire on it. So why does that matter to me? I mean, why should that matter to anybody? It's the design on that whole thing. When you look at any generator head out there, there's probably thousands of turns I'm not even sure what gauge of wire, 16, 18 gauge or something. That's pretty good size wire in some of these stators. And then the old magnetos like they used in motorcycles, you know, 12-volt jobs, or even the ones in your riding lawnmowers, electric start lawnmowers, up underneath that flywheel is a magneto that they use to charge up your battery while you're driving your riding lawnmower. But it's a lot of copper wire inside there. And whereas you're getting a higher current flow with those larger wires, it's still, in my mind, the way that I see things work mechanically, it's still impressive to me that on such a tiny scale, just a tiny bit of copper wire inside that little hard drive motor, that if that thing spun up to enough RPMs, that it will literally send out, I think at one point I measured over 460 volts AC on this thing. And keep in mind, I'm not saying that this thing is going to run your house as it stands or anything like that. But what I am saying is that's a lot of voltage for something so incredibly small. And scaled up, if you go look at the X13 motors or the Fisher and Paco or Samsung versions of the washing machine, direct drive or smart drive, whichever, there's like a lot of, probably about 20 different names for every different product out there. It drives me nuts. Can't just specifically say, you know, hey, this is a particular motor and that, leave it at that. Now they got to put a million names on it. But anyway, if you look at those big, giant motors, it's actually a scaled-up version of that doggone little tiny hard drive motor. And I'm not exactly sure how many RPMs those hard drives actually put out without looking. You wouldn't happen to know, would you, Thomas? How many RPMs a hard drive motor puts out when it's actually running?
They're cooking. Depend on the hard drive.
They're cooking right along.
Yeah, I think the slowest ones are 5,400 RPM.
Yeah, so at 5,400 RPM, that's getting with it right there. And that Dremel that I was using to spin that thing up, that thing, I think it said it actually has a maximum of 35,000 RPM. Hope that's not overstating it. I said it in a video, so you'd actually have to go watch the video. But regardless, if you could take that concept, if you had a method by which you could actually spin that doggone thing up continuously, you know, keeping it under pressure, like using a Tesla turbine or a steam turbine, or even wind power for that matter, and be able to maintain a constant high voltage out of that. 460 volts AC is more than enough to energize gas into the plasma state. You can see that with the fluorescent bulbs, you can actually light those up, or even the that little fluorescent bulb starters with the argon gas inside there. You can actually energize that gas into the plasma state. And the higher that voltage gets, the hotter that plasma becomes inside that whatever tube you got going on there, your light bulbs or your plasma globes or whatever. But what's impressive about this whole deal, I'm not sure if I'm getting my point across, is the lack of amount of copper wire that it actually requires to get some serious voltage going on. And you can sit there and light up a 120-volt strand of LED lighting with that. It doesn't sound like a whole lot. But, once again, you're looking at the generating source. It's a micro version of what was going on inside their pulse DC stator motors that they use inside of washing machines. And for those of you who are old enough to remember, back in the day, the washing machines used to have a transmission to them. They don't have to have a transmission anymore. You know, they had a transmission with a belt inside there, and that's 9 times out of 10 what went bad. It was either the electric motor that ran the belt for the transmission, or it was the transmission itself finally wore out and the bearings got bad and it wouldn't work anymore. But there was a whole lot more hardware inside of an old washing machine than there is modern day washing machines. There's a whole lot more circuitry inside of a modern day washing machine because basically it's pulsing a DC current and turning that motor, but it has enough torque to it to literally turn all the wet clothes and the water and the drum itself inside that washing machine all off of an electric motor. That's pretty doggone impressive. So we did a couple videos and actually talked about it on a few shows back about turning those washing machine motors into generators. Imagine if you could get one of those stator motors up to about 35,000 RPMs, how much energy you could pull up off of there if that hard drive motor is capable of at least 460, being as small as it is. So what do you think, Thomas? What do you think's going on inside that?
I think there's a whole lot less going on in there than under this bus I just got thrown under.
Well, if we think about how we actually generate electricity right now, you know, a brute force magnetic field that we're trying to shake loose some electrons to get some current flow, and you think about all the energy that it actually takes in order to do that, I can understand now why everybody thinks that, over unity or even free energy or whatever is not possible. Because if you go off of the mathematics and the scales of what everything's been done so far, it's all built super inefficient. You know, you don't need as much energy or the magnetic field, all they have to do is be able to interact with each other. That's it. They don't have to be like 3 feet outside of one another. It's counterproductive. But the common denominator from the actual current that's going through your wall and the current that's actually in that doggone deal is the voltage right there. And voltage is pressure. And pressure can get work done. So why couldn't we redesign how our electric motors actually function? You got any thoughts under that bus?
Well, on that ring magnet you're talking about, one thing that needs to be, I guess, clarified is that there's opposing fields being generated by that ring because they don't just, it's not... No, I don't think they're even magnetized diametrically. It's like two diametric ring or cylindrical magnets that are being generated there, or fields, whenever they make those. So maybe more. I mean...
Well, I know when you look inside there, there's actually like a little metal ring around the outside of that. Muddy was always talking about how by putting a piece of steel on the back of a magnet will actually kind of... make it a little bit stronger, or at least focus the field to where it's stronger. You see what I mean?
Right. On the other side.
Yeah.
Away from the metal.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, like I said, though, that if you put that thing underneath a piece of magnet paper, you'll see real quick what I'm talking about, where the field is basically switching back and forth as it goes around that ring facing inward.
So yeah.
If you put that up against, like, say, let's say you have just a rod of steel, right, that's sticking out from a central hub that comes close to the surface of that magnet, and you rotate, or let's say a cross, right, so you've got four points of contact where you basically have that magnet attracting to that thing, put it all on a spindle so it can't slam into any one part. And then, but it'll spin freely, and you'll notice that when you spin that magnet around, it's going to grab and then let go, and then grab and let go. You're basically going to have a bunch of sticky points you have to bust it loose from to keep it spinning around, because it's literally switching the surface of that ring as it rotates past one of those pieces of steel, switching between north and south fields.
Well, in the direct drive or smart drive washing machine motors, if you look inside the hub on that, there are several different magnets. They're not a solid ring like inside the hard drive motor. I actually kind of like the hard drive motor better. You know, any one magnet or even several magnets put together will basically combine their field, and basically you'll have a measurable flux line if you got the magnet paper like you're talking about that is all one field. It's not for every single magnet. There's not a separate field, if you understand what I'm saying. When you bring these all together, the fields combine. Well, with that ring magnet like that, you know, it's all one field, but it's a continuous around. And if you look at all these magnets that you can actually buy out there online, there are some that have holes in them that most generally they use to put on shafts so that they can.
That's what I was trying to say, is that because it switches back and forth, it's like you basically took a bunch of magnets, like you're talking about, and you flip them back and forth as you're putting them together, so that you're having to actually force them together and glue them down to keep them from flying apart and flipping around in order to go in the correct orientation for the attraction that they have.
Yeah.
And that's why that ring allows those coils in there to basically, when they flip, the power flips back and forth going through them, causes the ring to want to change positions. So if they were all going the same, if it was all the same direction, if like the inside of that ring was all south, no matter which face you were, which side of the face you were on,
yeah,
and the outside was north, that thing would never spin. It just sits still. That's why I said the inside of that ring switches back and forth between being a north and south field.
Yeah, so essentially in that magnet, there's still a north and south field. It's just a single one, and because it's able to spin so fast, you're still
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not a single one. There's multiple north and south fields on that.
On the same exact magnet?
Yep. Huh. All they did was they just basically put a magnetic field that was right next to another magnetic field with wires to generate the north and south switch back and forth between the different portions of the arc of that ring.
Well, and
get yourself one next time you have a chance. Take it apart and get that little magnet out of there, and take a if you can get it out without breaking it, and get a, like, you know, just a regular magnet, a little one, right, that you know which end, like a bar magnet, and go around the surface of that and watch how it jumps out, pulls in towards the inside, and then will try to flip around in your hand as you move it around.
Well, either way, they're pretty doggone impressive that they can actually get that much. So if you look at this in a mechanical sense of what's actually occurring inside that hard drive, inside mm-hmm. that motor, you know, it has a basically a pulse DC circuit. These are brushless AC motors, but they're not running off of AC current like you'd think. There's a timing with Hall effect sensors and stuff that turns the fields on and off at certain times. That's why there's and some hard drive motors you'll have like four wires. Some of them's only got three. But they're not running like your conventional AC motor would run. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a pulse DC that is changing that field to make that thing run. But it's happening so rapidly that you get, if you're saying they get like 5,500 RPMs, that's fast. You know?
There's more than one set of coil in there too. If you look, there's at least three leads leading into any one of those.
Yeah.
So you have two in a three lead system. You have at least two systems inside there, where whenever you pulse that DC across one set of leads, it pulls one direction, then you pulse it back to the other set of leads and turn the first set off, then it can, you know, basically has a direction that it spins try to attract to those coils that are being charged up to generate a magnetic field.
Inside those washer motors, it's pretty much the same design. You can get like two phase, you turn it into a two-phase generator by spinning it backwards, you know, and I did the same thing with this little hard drive. It's actually like a two-phase. It probably could be go to three as far as that goes, depending on how this thing was wound. But either way, it's still... These things are capable of generating some serious torque. You know, it's on a scaled-down version that you think that hard drive motor really doesn't have a lot of torque, but in reality, it's still got to turn that platter in there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, for its size, it's spinning quite a bit of material, even with the platters being aluminum.
That's what I was trying to say. I mean, I watched Ryan do a video where he was doing pulsing a X13 with like 9 volts. And he was putting all kinds of weight on top of this thing. Keep in mind, a lot of the weight was riding on the shaft, but still, nonetheless, the more weight you put on top of that thing, the harder that motor's got to work to turn it around. He was sitting on top of it at one point, physically, and it was still turning him because they got a lot of torque. So I'm really excited about those particular motors and how they're designed. And I think that those particular motors could be some really good generators. You know, me and Raymond was monkeying around with that X13 when he was out there, and we were getting quite a good voltage out of that thing. Actually, he got the crud shocked out of him at one point because he touched the wrong wires. But I just say there's something more going on inside those motors, and the way that we visualize electricity actually functioning is I don't believe we're even close to where that energy is actually coming from. If you understand what I'm trying to say, because the faster you spin that hard drive, the higher that voltage is going to rise. And I don't know if there's any limitation to how high that voltage could actually rise. Let's say you could spin that thing.
Oh, there is.
Well,
I could tell you one that I see right away, and that's the coating that's on your wires. The second you exceed the dielectric strength of that wire, you're going to get it short. It's going to dead short out, and it's going to blow out those wires because it's not going through the entire system, and the resistance drops.
Yeah, so
with the resistance being overcome by that dielectric, the resistance is going to drop in the length of wire that it's running through, and then you'll have no motor.
Let's say hypothetically that the bearings on this thing could hold up to 1,000,000 RPMs. I mean, it'd be just cooking right along, and the coating on the wire could hold up to 1,000,000 volts. I'm just thinking outside the crazy right here, because I know that...
Now, outside the crazy?
Yeah.
you mean thinking inside the crazy, right?
No, I'm going way outside the crazy. I'm past crazy.
Oh, beyond the crazy, huh?
Yeah, beyond crazy. Imagine if you could get that thing to spin at 1,000,000 RPMs. I'm wondering at what point that voltage would stop rising. That's the key. I don't know anybody who's ever spun anything very high past, I know about 50,000 RPMs. What's the highest RPMs you've ever heard any piece of machinery going at?
Well, some of those, like I said, they start at 5,400. That's like your laptop hard drive.
Yeah.
A desktop hard drive is 7,200 that you see the top end on. They still have some 3.5-inch units that are only 5,400 RPM too, but they've got server hard drives that go all the way up to 15,000 RPM.
Well,
that's just to increase decrease the seat time, the amount of time it takes basically for that head to move from place to place on the platter to find whatever it is you're looking for, because your data is physically having to be found kind of the way you have to find. You have to roll around in a groove on a record to find a particular section of audio that's on there. It's not digital in the sense that, like, you can just basically switch tracks and jump from one location to another instantly inside of like a little circuit board and bypass everything else.
Yeah, well, let's take away the whole having to do any kind of work whatsoever so far with this thing, and then talk about just spinning that thing. I mean, just as fast as you can get that thing to go backwards, like I did that with the Dremel, or like we did with the X13s or the washing machine motors.
Right. I don't think you could probably spin one of those hard drive motors more than double the speed without the platters on them. Like, you remove the platters, you'd probably be able to get about double the speed before you blow it out. So it's like 30,000 RPM.
So
for a good like SCSI hard drive or a good SAS hard drive.
Mechanical wise, it's going to be reliant on how bearings and basically the design of the thing will actually hold up, you know, because centrifugal force can literally start to pull things apart.
Right.
And so with that said, I would like to see some experiments. I know there's some air tools out there that got some serious RPMs to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some pneumatic tools. I'd like to take one of these hard drive motors and literally see the maximum that thing could hold up before it literally flew apart, and how high that voltage would actually raise up doing that. You know, what's the purpose? It's basically give you some sort of measurement on, you know, is there a limitation to how much voltage or how that voltage will rise the faster that magnetic field is manipulated?
Oh, actually, I can see a serious flaw in trying to go too fast with that. Magnetic hysteresis. There's a point where, because you have an iron core in each of those things,
yeah,
that you will literally pass your magnetic field past that thing so fast that the magnetic field that was already in the iron from the last pole that passed by it will not have dissipated, so you'll never get any electromagnetic energy generation, because you never get a pulse of magnetic field through that coil, because
see,
it doesn't get a chance
a
to overcome
sense.
That. Yeah, it doesn't get a chance to overcome that other field and collapse it.
That makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like what I was talking about, the Tesla coils in the Slayer exciter circuits are happening so fast, they're pulsing. The switch is going so fast that field is collapsing back in on itself because it's just happening too fast. It don't have time to reach its maximum width. If you visualize the magnetic field being, let's say, 3 feet in diameter, then that's its maximum power. Well, if it's pulsing too fast, it ain't got enough time to get all the way out to the deal before the next wave done came in. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the other thing too, though, is like I said, the material that you're using picks up a magnetic field. It's an iron, so
yeah.
It's ferromagnetic. That means basically if you put a magnet near it and you pull the magnet away, that magnetic field is still there to some degree. It doesn't just go away. So you have to actually force that magnetic field to go the other direction. And if you don't give it enough time, that magnetic field will not completely dissipate. So it'll still be there whenever the next, whenever that, say a north field passes over, it won't have switched from the south field it had. And whenever the south field comes back along, all it's going to do is just basically magnify the south field that's in there, because it's not as strong as it is whenever the magnet is there. So you're going to get this fluctuation where at some point it's just going to basically be going back and forth between a stronger and a weaker south field. It's never going to actually achieve a north field.
So some point,
get that electron flow going.
Some point in there is going to be a sweet spot, the most efficient spot to run this at a certain RPMs. You know, with the, let's just say the bearings and everything will hold up to whatever it is that you can put max.
Well, your sweet spot is going to be based on resistance. Once you hit a certain voltage, you're able to push over the resistance that's in all the circuitry that you're trying to run that electron flow through. If you're running under that, then it's not going to be able to achieve that push through efficiently or at all. And if you're going too fast, then you're basically losing energy that you could be getting out of it.
Well, I know that there was a study done here a while back by some alternative energy guys about generators, and once you got past a certain RPM, you lost that cogging effect. You didn't have to fight so hard to actually turn.
Yeah, because you're not actually getting that field to completely collapse inside that core. That means you're not generating any power. Once you break that cogging effect, you're not really generating any power. You're generating a lot less power. You keep dropping and dropping the amount of power. Only way you're going to get rid of that cogging effect is if you stop spinning the magnet past the coil, the magnet past the coil.
I don't think you're losing the complete power of the deal. I think what you're losing is the current portion of it. I think it doesn't have enough time to build up the amperage, so to speak, or the current flow.
Well, you're going to lose some. Right, you're going to lose some as you're going, as the voltage is going up. But at some point, you're not going to have anything at all. All you're going to have is a pulse DC, and it's going to be a very, very weak pulse DC power, because the other waveform, the other side of the wave, is never getting a chance to be generated by the coil receiving the other directional force of the magnet. Because that iron is not letting it pass through it. You'd have to basically do yourself a favor and look at, what is it, there's a waveform generator on, or not generator, but basically a way to look at the waveform, say on transistors and whatnot, on an oscilloscope. And when you look at it, if you look at the hysteresis of any material, which they study all this, because the lower the hysteresis on like a transformer, the less energy you lose, because when the wave switches the other direction as you got your AC current coming through it, the energy, while it's basically overcoming that hysteresis of the material that the core is made out of, is completely lost. It does nothing on the other side. So you get more power going in than you get coming out. But when you lower that hysteresis point, that means more of your wave power is actually making it to the other side, because it starts pulsing the other direction sooner and then stops pulsing at approximately the same time and starts going the other direction a lot sooner, right?
Well, and there's also one other thing that I kind of want to throw in the mix to kind of muddy up the water, so to speak. It's a really blow your mind. You can take and you can generate a high frequency, high voltage using, you know, basically circuitry, switches and transistors and resistors and diodes and stuff like that. You can literally produce high voltage doing that. Now, we're talking about high voltage on a mechanical scale right there. So some of what I've been talking about doing, you could actually do with circuitry, because actually the MOSFETs and the transistors are probably going to be fast enough to do exactly what I'm talking about doing by spinning the magnets. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
You still get the high frequency, high voltage, not the current that you want for the run of what we got going on, but you'll still get that high frequency and high voltage easier with the doggone solid state, basically, you know, transistors, resistors, that kind of stuff. What do you think?
Hold on, you're losing me a little bit, because I'm doing a poll to get you something so you can visually see this. There's a link in there. Go click on that link and you'll see what I'm talking about. The line flow that they're showing there is showing the amount of electron flow versus the amount of magnetic force.
Yep.
And how it changes as you switch from one direction on the pole to the other direction in order to generate saturation and destroy the previous saturation that's left behind naturally in the material. And there's a company out there called MetGlass that has been able to take the market by storm, because they could kill so much of that hole that forms. It forms like it looks like a leaf.
Yeah.
Where you got two points on either end, where one point is the saturation point of a north field into the coil, and the other is a south field. So you're changing the direction of the electron flow that's in any coil that's wrapped around that piece of steel that has had its magnetic field switched, right?
Yeah.
And the time that it takes inside that hole is all lost power. So the bigger that hole is, the more inefficient your mechanism is, right? Soft iron versus hard iron cores have a major difference between them. You'll see that in there.
So
but they have this stuff called metglass, which is basically iron that has been passed through, and there's usually a high silicon content too, but it's been passed through from a liquid state to a cold state so fast that it creates this ribbon of crystalline metal so that you can't get any coercive force in between the particles. They're independent.
Are you familiar with the difference between a positive displacement pump and a non-positive displacement pump? A positive displacement pump would be one like they use in hydraulics. It's got like gears that literally force the fluid through and it can't come back the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
A non-positive displacement pump is one that's like has an impeller, kind of like the one you have in your automobile water pump. Well, what I'm seeing, what you're trying to explain to me is that if you had, let's take the water pump in your car. It spins at the RPM of the actual engine itself, and so it's designed so that whenever this thing is spinning around, even though it's not a positive displacement, it still produces enough of a vortex inside there to circulate the water through your radiator and then back up and through your engine again. However, if you took that same pump and you spun it too fast, you would literally get to a point where it wouldn't pump water anymore. You see what I'm saying? Because it's going too fast, it doesn't have enough surface area to keep that water to going, and that's the way I'm visualizing what you're saying right here with how the electricity, once you get the thing going too fast, it don't have the time. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and like I said, the material matters quite a bit in that system. Like I said, You have to look at it this way, okay? If you leave a magnet sticking to, say, a screwdriver that's not magnetic for a while, and you take the magnet off and suddenly you notice there's a little bit of a magnetic field left in that screwdriver, that's essentially the effect that you're dealing with, because when you flip that magnet over, there's going to be some resistance to pushing that up to that screwdriver because it's already got its own magnetic field that's saying, this is the field I'm going to stick with.
Yeah.
And you have to force that magnet up against there to drive that magnetic field out of there. If you don't have enough time to do that, like you're talking about, it won't happen. Well, it'll still be retaining the original magnetic field the from the very last time that there was a magnetic field close to it that was there long enough to actually structure that material.
Well, I guess to kind of explain it just a little bit more in a simpler fashion, it's like when your car tire is slipping in the mud and you lose traction. You know, normally that car tire's got a lot of power and can move a lot of force with it, but if it slips, you ain't going nowhere. So I'm saying that's the same thing that could be going on in electricity once you got the thing going too fast. It's the same way it would be for a water pump. If the water pump was spinning too fast, it wouldn't have time.
Well, yeah, that's only some of it, though. Like I said, you're getting a magnetic field in those coils that you're not changing anymore. It's not being changed because the new magnetic field that comes by doesn't even have enough time in order to alter it. If it is altering the coil's field, it's doing so against the will of the core, which is completely counterintuitive. You want to use the core to pull the magnetic field down into the core of that coil of wire and concentrate it on that wire instead of it just coming out as a big balloon in all directions, hitting a bunch of air around it, which is doing you no good. It doesn't generate any electron flow if it's outside of the coil. It's got to be saturated into the coil, right?
Yeah.
So I would say it's more like the faster you get that tire spinning, eventually what ends up happening is the tire ends up deflating, so it can't get any grip because it's not making contact with the surface anymore.
Well, I think
if you want to use that approximation, that's the closest thing I can think of that would match that.
I think that would be a really interesting experiment to actually take a non-positive displacement pump and a couple other deals, even the electricity portion of it with spinning at certain RPMs to see when it finally gets to the point where it drops off.
Right. You know, well, and this is an instance where, I've argued against using air cores for magnet generators on things like wind turbines and whatnot because they're not going very fast.
Yeah.
With muddy, but in this instance, that air core would be perfect for that because there'd be no iron core to get saturated. You're going to be throwing away energy no matter what. In that instance, using the air core, I think you'd be throwing away less energy than you would if you tried to continue using an iron core in there. Unless you're using something that can handle that hysteresis changeover, like the MechBIOS material up to a certain point. But I mean, the speeds you were theoretically talking about with, like, a million RPM or whatever, I don't think even it could keep up. Not even the best of it. And they've got several classes, some that look like an S. The S doesn't have a hole in it at all whenever you look at it under their timing mechanisms. But when you start stretching, what you're doing is you're compressing your RPM into shorter and shorter time, which means you got to expand that time, like slow it down. And that's where you're going to see that S is going to start expanding to turn into a fat little S-shaped hole again inside that met glass. Even the best material they've got is going to still give you some losses. And you'll end up probably far surpassing that to where it's still not able to keep up with you.
I guess that I'm trying to get at what's going on, like with the Slayer exciter or the Tesla coil. Whenever you're pumping out a wave that basically becomes wireless energy, when you're running generator, you're essentially sending a wave through a coil wire. Now it's more contained, more controlled, and so when those fields are coupling with each other, you seem to get a stronger field that way. Mm-hmm. But regardless, it's still the same energy that you got going on. Even though you got one that's running off of a transistor and you got the other one that's being done mechanically, it's still the same energy being pulsed. It's just in a completely different form. And depending on how you do it or the RPMs slower or faster will determine on how long that field actually has a chance to expand out to its, full strength.
Right. Don't they usually use a ferrite ring to wrap their wire around for the Slayer exciter?
No, not a Slayer exciter. It's all air core. Now, what you're talking about would be like the toroids that they wind around the, like flyback transformers and stuff like that. They'll wind up like three wires around, and then you'll use one of them to pulse, and then the other ones to feed to catch that flyback on the way out when it's done pulsing.
Right. I think I seem to recall that your frequency of the increase and collapse of that field, though, was controlled by you've got a transistor that's being basically triggered by a capacitor that has to be filled from a resistor, so the lower the resistance value and the lower the capacitance value, the faster it'll basically pulse back and forth because you can fill that capacitor up faster or whatever.
Yeah.
I have to look again.
Well,
I guess I need to build one of these days.
What I like about DC current, keep in mind I like AC current more, but what I like about DC current is the strength of the field. Whereas, it can't go out as far as an AC wave, but it still has a strong field. And, mm-hmm. and they figured that out. That's why they're using those in them Samsung and Fisher and Paykel direct drive or smart drive, whatever you want to call them. Stator motors is what it is. But they got a lot of torque. Now, DC packs a punch. Where AC can send the signal out a lot farther because of the way that it works.
No, the DC could send it further. The problem is stepping it down. It's not easy to step down high DC voltage to lower DC voltage and not blow everything out in the house. In the DC system, see, this is a lot of people. What a lot of people don't get: the difference between Edison and Tesla's design was that Edison had to have mechanical devices all over the place in order to continue transmitting a longer distance.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have an efficient means to bring that DC power back down. He was basically either using a very high voltage DC generator or motor running a low voltage DC generator, so that the high voltage was still not spinning it fast enough to create a high voltage out of the generator. In order to lower the voltage, if he was going to send it with high voltage, usually they just basically ran the regular voltage along, and where it started getting, they figured their drop off point, the end of their drop off point, was they'd drop another motor that would run off of the power that's coming from that running another generator to start the whole thing up again to overcome the resistance. With the AC voltage, all you had to have were basically some coils and some iron cores, and boom, you were done. No moving parts.
Yeah.
Nothing to wear out, you know? So the wear ratio of those pulses causing the coils to expand and contract just from the magnetic field is far, far lower than what you'd have in, especially in the bearings they were using then, because most of the bearings they were using then were like oil impregnated bronze or something. There were no moving parts in there. You literally had one part that was sliding across another part directly. Unlike the high speed roller bearings, where we actually have three sets of parts. You've got an inner ring and an outer ring that are separated by a bunch of balls that are in between there that rotate around. So they're not actually grinding and sliding across each other. They're just rolling smoothly across the surface.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you get a long time out of that, as opposed to the thing that's basically sitting there. Basically, it's doing the equivalent of trying to, you know, drill through something.
Well, this the modern day oscillating fans or whatever, the regular little motors, even inside your microwave oven, the little fan motors inside there, they've got the bearings like you're talking about. It's just like a little brass or whatever bearing.
Yeah, but there's no torque on that. For those generators to run those households, even for just some simple lights, that was quite a bit of torque and quite a bit of pressure on those bearings.
Yeah, but still, after a while, those things will finally start to squeal and they'll wear out until they finally seize and generate enough heat to actually mess that little motor up. But
I've had to fix one before. I've dropped some Teflon sleeves in it to fix it.
Yeah, but if you take the time to, lubricate these every so often, they'll never wear out.
Well, and that's probably what they were doing to try to avoid the man hours of going out and constantly re-greasing those bearings. Because it probably had some sort of mechanism that had a little hole in it, and it basically just gave a gravity-fed process to drop oil from that container down into the bearing, a little drop every now and then to keep it going before it would have a chance to wear out.
I guess what I'm trying to get at with this hard drive motor and the way that these new washing machine motors are, is I'm actually trying to get down to the heart of what is actually going on inside there. We know, according to the way that electricity has been explained to us, when those fields are shifting from north to south, they're creating that fluctuation in there, basically shaking those electrons around and getting them going, and basically creates the current flow that we want. Mm-hmm. However, you can get the same frequency out of a transistor, a circuit board, that you can get out of a mechanical deal. So that throws another monkey wrench in there, what's actually going on. And basically, you know, it goes all the way back to when Tesla was flipping that knife switch on and off, trying to see why it is that there was a surge of power. When he first hit the switch, it'd be a surge, and then everything would level itself back out. But he noticed that if you did that repeatedly over and over, you could actually build up a charge that eventually it would break out, like the Tesla coil itself. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And end up hurting somebody.
Yeah. Well, holy smokes, 1946 RPM, University of Virginia, 1946 RPM, is that 37,000, or is that 37,980,000 magnetic bearings in the vacuum? I don't know, I'm not reading this right. Can you look in the Shaziz chat room and see what that says?
Give me a second.
My brain is like...
I don't even have that up just to tell you right now how long you're going to have to wait, because I got to actually pull the page up.
Oh, well, my brain is slipping in the mud at the moment. Stephen Gins posted a deal that said J.W. Beams, University of Virginia, 1946 RPM. It looks like 37,980,000 magnetic bearings in a vacuum. Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is, we know that energy travels in waves. And we know that basically water and electricity, they pretty much function the same, you know. And in electronics, if you can understand plumbing, you can pretty much understand how electricity flows through the circuits. You know, it's got valves and, you know, pumps and stuff like that. Same thing with water. But, you know, in this hard drive, I still can't get over the fact, in that hard drive motor, how little amount of copper wire is actually in that hard drive motor.
Mm-hmm.
And how weak that magnet, at least to me, appears to be. Keep in mind, I'm not down there on that scale, so there's probably a lot going on there. But that motor, scaled up, is the washing machine motor. Now imagine if you could get that washing machine motor with a whole lot more copper wire, which is essentially, the copper wire is nothing more than railroad tracks. It's the guidance system for that electron flow. You know, the thicker the wire, and the more turns, the more current flow you can actually get going on. The thinner the wire, the higher the pressure, the higher the voltage you can get going on. But there is a certain point, if that thinner wire is shorted out, it basically will feed back on itself and burn the coating off of that wire, or burn the wire in two, literally.
I don't see whatever it was you were talking about.
It was in the super chat room on the...
Okay, I see it now. Yeah, it's 37,980,000 magnetic bearing in a vacuum.
Man.
So, well, yeah, you basically have, you don't even have air to create any drag or damage to your part, so you can spin it up to whatever speed you need to in a vacuum.
Well, could you imagine that, though? How much, if you could actually build a generator inside the doggone vacuum like that, that mm-hmm. While it's inside the generator itself, is the railroad tracks that would energize any gas that surrounds it?
I'm pretty sure you'd have to have more than it's going to be an insane amount, but imagine your wires that have a foot thick layer of insulation on them, how little wire you'd be able to put into even a fairly decent sized coil. And you're looking at not a foot, but yards of material that has to be between each layer of that wire.
So I guess what would be the next question is then, you know that when you cool something down, you can keep it from basically I'm getting to superconductors. Now, if you could build a wire instead of out of copper, out of a superconductor that's cooled with maybe like liquid nitrogen or whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're
looking at a lot of energy to generate a situation like that and to maintain it.
Even just for testing purposes, would that keep that copper wire from ever even being able to break down, or would it actually be a hindrance by basically freezing the electrons in place? See what I'm saying?
You'd have to get a heck of a lot colder than that to freeze electrons in place.
Well,
they actually were still getting electron effect. That's why they had the explosion whenever they ran that super cooling system, the Bose-Einstein condensate in Colorado.
Yeah.
And they literally cooled those things down to just like a we're talking a minuscule fraction of a single degree of absolute zero, and watched all those atoms collapse in on each other and take occupy the same space, creating a super atom.
Holy smokes, that's crazy.
I'm opening 300 atoms, they destroyed an almost a city block sized building that had no occupants in it. Yeah. Made out of concrete and reinforced concrete and steel rebar.
You hear that train in the background?
What's that?
I said, did you hear that train in the background?
Uh-uh.
I had to open my window. It's getting hot up in this joint. Duct tape and baling wire. That's what keeps Shazia's radio going. Duct tape and baling wire and a few pennies found off the sidewalk. Anyway, if that little hard drive motor is capable of putting out 460 volts AC or higher, depending on how high them RPM's going, I want to find out the limitation. I want to find out what's the fastest, most efficient way that I can spin that doggone hard drive up to see what its maximum potential is. I also want to do it on a scaled up version using the motor like the in the direct drive washing machines. Smart drives or whatever they call them.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them is going to have their limitations. Now, centrifugal force wise, I think the hard drive motor is going to hold up better than the larger version. I mean, the larger version, the way that their magnets are seated inside there, they're inside the wall, so they can't like spin out and hit you in the face. But they might get to a point where they literally the glue that holds the magnets inside could break down and have catastrophic failure, or the bearings that are actually holding the
I was going to say, you're probably going to have to switch your bearings out. You have to add some extra bearing reinforcement, bigger bearings, or bigger surface area, rather. So, I don't know what they're using in there, but I'm guessing that if they don't have needle bearings, they need to switch it out to needle bearings from roller bearings, or ball bearings.
I don't know, I never took apart one of the bearing portions of it to see what actually has inside there, but
right.
I think
needle bearings will handle a lot more pressure and speed, so
yeah,
they're made right. Well, unless you go with a magnetic bearing system like Gibbons is talking about.
I'd like to figure out exactly what's occurring inside that doggone hard drive motor. The anomaly that I'm talking about, you know, like I said, with the transistors, resistors, or MOSFETs, or really fast switching circuitry, you can generate the same frequencies that you can generate mechanically with electricity. So electricity, they're both related. You know, the magnetic field that you want, on the other hand, if you can generate basically a brute force magnetic field using electronics, it seems to me that it would take a whole lot less energy input in order to do that than it would be for a mechanical version of the same. You understand what I'm trying to say here?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when, like a mechanical version where you take a really strong magnet and you're spinning it past the coil and you got to contend with all the losses from the bearings to the cogging effect of it trying to go past that core or whatever. But if you have an air core design that doesn't have to fight with the metal, that's one less deal that would help it spin just a little bit faster. That's why I was talking to Muddy about I wanted to build a high voltage version of his actual flux wind turbine. And I want to build a high voltage version of his ceiling fan wind turbine. Because I want to just, I'm right now at this point in the game, I'm only interested in high voltage. I couldn't care less about current flow at this point. Because what I want to do is take that energy and be able to move it really rapidly. You know, to the point like, I was talking to one of my friends here on Facebook that I met. I mentioned him on the show last time. Let me look and see where. Jermaine Fishwick. His name on Skype there. He's interested in Tesla technology and a real good person as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I was talking to him about this morning, just kind of briefly this morning, about the Van de Graaff generators, Wimshurst, and the Lord Kelvin generator. You know, you can get a static charge buildup by, you know, dropping water through metal containers and stuff like that, or you can get a static from the friction of two different materials rubbing across each other, such as the Van de Graaff generator, or even the Wimshurst design, where literally you just got plates that are passing in front of each other, and the atmosphere in between those plates is what's actually building up that static charge. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But that static charge can actually be not only stored, but used to pulse as well. A really strong DC charge. So imagine if you had a Wimshurst-style windmill outside. Number one, you're not going to be putting it under a direct load, and there's not going to be that back EMF or that cogging going on, but you're still going to produce that high voltage. At this point in the game, it's happening so fast, you don't have enough time to build up any current flow. So you're not going to be able to run your house directly off of that. But imagine if you had some plates to where as that generator is actually spinning, when it finally gets to the point where it can ionize the air in between that generator and that plate, it will send a charge out, just like the Van de Graaff does. If you leave it alone, it will build up a charge, and you can watch the distance between how far that charge can actually jump across and basically hit you in the leg on the way by, you know. It's kind of like how they had problems with Edison's DC current back in the day. If you had a charge built up on you and got too close to one of them outlets, it wasn't beyond the realms of reality that electricity would literally jump out of that socket and shock the crud out of you. You know what I'm saying? And so, taking all these things that we know from history and electricity and all that kind of stuff there, all we're doing is basically moving the energy that we want to use away from whatever source we're generating it with. And run and getting some work done in the process. So if you can have that Van de Graaff generator or the Wimshurst would probably be the best, because it's actually just using the friction of the air in between those plates that's building up the charge on there, and then being picked up by collector cones that when it builds up high enough, it can leap across the spark gap and hit one of those plates, and those plates would be connected to some DC capacitors down there. And once that tank is filled up, the moment that tank is filled up and can't hold anymore, that energy's got to go somewhere. And so it's going to take the shortest path to ground. So if you got a short spark gap on this side of the capacitor, as opposed to the longer spark gap that you got on the side that has the Wimshurst, it takes a lot more energy for it to jump the gap on the Wimshurst side. And so on the opposite side, the shortest path, it's not going to go backwards towards the Wimshurst, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make the next leap over to the shortest gap, which will be towards the capacitors, and dump that energy down into the capacitors. All right, now, the question is, can you move enough high voltage rapidly enough to charge a capacitor bank big enough to actually be able to run inverters off of the opposite side of this deal? Now, I did a little video called Unsubscribe, where in this video I showed a circuit board that was put together that I was using a little hand crank generator to actually charge up the capacitors. On the initial first couple turns on there, it was hard to kind of turn that crank, but the more I turned it and the energy started to flow inside there, it got easier and easier to turn. And once those 500,000 microfarad capacitors, there's three of them in that circuit, once they were charged up, the circuit board underneath it came to life. And then from that point on, all I had to do was every so often turn it a little bit. I didn't have to keep continuously putting more energy into it. So what I'm saying is that it's the Olympic-sized swimming pool example that I gave, is that you've got an Olympic-sized swimming pool, it'll hold a lot of water. All right? Now, initially, it's going to take you a long time to fill it completely up. But if you got smaller swimming pool and then even a smaller swimming pool all the way down to your bucket, all those smaller ones were going to remain full until that large one goes completely dry. And so if you got a large enough power bank before all the circuits that you're wanting to run off your inverters, they only need so much energy to run. And if there's a big fuel tank, so to speak, on this side of the deal, and you're continuously trickle charging that deal so that it can never get down below 50% of its volume in there, or even a quarter for that matter. If it never goes dry, period, then all those other circuits down there will continuously remain charged. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So the point is, by using high voltage, I can move the energy really fast. All right, and in the process of using that high voltage, not only am I using the energy to move it really fast and change the form of that energy, I'm not bogging down the main generator like I would be if I was running a direct load. I'm taking that high voltage energy and I'm running it into essentially a plasma reactor, which is actually designed to do a couple different things. One of which is to keep it contained from the outside so that there's no oxygen, hydrogen, or nitrogen, or even dust or bugs interacting with this this reaction going on inside there. So there's it, once you get it up to its maximum generator, from the generator, whatever energy that generator is able to maximize inside this deal, that's your limitation inside there. But the deal is, that energy that I just pulled away from there, I'm not just able to pull it off of as far as turning it into plasma. That plasma generates heat, it also generates light. Light is heat, heat is light, is what science tells us. Alright, and so, inside here, the way that this thing is designed, you're also picking up the charge as that energy wants to go somewhere. It's going to go anywhere. Don't care. It's just looking for the shortest path to ground, wherever it can go. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're actually picking up a high voltage charge and heat and light out of the same exact unit. So you can heat water with this thing. You can move high voltage off of this thing into a capacitor bank, which is basically the Olympic-sized swimming pool, and at the same time get visible light out of it. So you got like a 3-for-1 running off of the same exact generator that you would have been using if you had it on a direct load. The difference is, you're not invoking Lenz's law, because Lenz's law still requires, when you put that current to a coil of wire, it's going to produce a secondary magnetic field that's going to basically oppose the first one. So there's a limitation where you can go with that magnetic field. But if you're just using that generator spun backwards mechanically to produce this energy, and you're not trying to draw a direct load off of it, instead you're allowing that energy to flow freely out of that generator into a chamber of gas, just to energize that gas into the plasma state. That's the only purpose that generator head has, is to basically build up a high enough frequency to energize that gas into the plasma state. And the same exact thing can be done, because it's also in that same video, unsubscribe, the same exact thing can be done with a 555 timer, which essentially is producing a high frequency that is energizing the gas in the little tube inside there into the plasma state. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So with high voltage, not trying to pull current watts or amps or anything like that, not trying to pull all that yet, just taking, being able to move that energy in a form of a wave completely away from the generator. Alright? That, at the very least, as far as I can see mechanically in my mind, is making that initial generator more efficient than it was before, because now it doesn't have to work so hard, which means less fuel input and less wear and tear on the doggone thing, because once Lenz's law comes into effect, you also got things like eddy currents and stuff like that that's going to generate heat inside that thing, that eventually you load it down too much, it has to work too hard, it gets hot, it breaks down the insulation on the wire, and then fails. Now, Gerard Morin out there on YouTube, he's been doing some research on pretty much on the same kind of subject, but not exactly, but he says that electricity is essentially radiation. And I tend to agree with him because energy travels in waves. And what do you think about when you think about radiation? I mean, it's a wave. When radioactive material is depleting it, it releases energy out into the air, which produces a wave. And microwaves, pretty much same thing. You know, it's the difference of that frequency which will determine what that wave can actually accomplish. Like a microwave, a super fast wave that's coming through and rocking a water molecule back and forth. Now, if a water molecule is a dipole molecule, like science says it is, then that means it has a positive and a negative pole on it, and that electronic wave that is being generated by the microwave, by the AC current to the transformer or magnetron, whichever version that you got nowadays, or they got what do they call these newer ones on there? They're essentially flyback transformers, but they're built a different way. Anyway, basically, it's just generating a wave. And if that wave's able to rock water back and forth so rapidly that it'll generate heat and, you know, eventually take the water molecule apart. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's the direction that I've been going as far as alternative energy, because once you understand how energy travels and you try to figure out the most efficient way to do it, right now, the least efficient way, as far as I'm concerned, is to use a brute force magnetic field like we've been doing. Now, granted, in the short term, you're going to get a stronger power by that brute field, you know, like dynamite. It's a bam, you know, you got this big, massive explosion. It kicks a lot of dirt around all instantaneously, as opposed to the firecracker, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're both going to be happening rapidly, but one's going to be more powerful than the other. If that makes any sense. Anyway, with some of these exotic materials that we've talked about, I think that we could literally build better conductors instead of just copper wire. You know, what about some graphene impregnated copper wire? Would that make any difference in how this thing could actually?
I think the copper would actually hinder that. You're talking about like graphene nanotubes or versus just graphene on copper.
Yeah. Well, what I'm visualizing is almost like a graphene core inside a hollow copper tubing. You see what I mean?
Right. You might be able to get something off of that. You'd have to plate the graphene after you made the graphene nanotube.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to look at every single option out there, because when I see the things like Robert Murray Smith's been doing with graphene technology,
mm-hmm.
and I see that perfected, there's really no limitations to where you could go with that. You know? And looking at that hard drive motor, I mean, I don't look at it the same way everybody else looks at it. You know, it's just a little motor. So what? You had to use a Dremel that took 120 volts AC, all that to run it. So it actually cost, it's saying I put more power into it than I was getting out the other side. I'm not looking to get the same amount of power out the other side. I'm looking to get a completely different form of energy out the other side.
Well, Dremel's not a very efficient use of energy either, so...
No, and I was actually using a buffer wheel as traction on there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to you have to use a lot of energy just to keep the motor spinning by itself, period. Then, of course, you're going to end up coming out negative, because then you have to put enough energy to get it spinning and keep it spinning. Then you have to put a little extra energy in there just to be able to send some of that energy into whatever it is you're trying to spin.
Yeah, but
so
Do you remember when Raymond was talking about his deal that he made that would lift like 60 or 80 pounds so many inches off the ground and basically...
Two-stage oscillator?
Yeah, that's the one. Well, think about that when that comes back down. If you got this weight that you're able to lift up something that high off the ground, and as that thing comes back down, it pushes on basically the equivalence of a pump or a bellow, and you could force that air that just came back down from that thing trying to level itself back out through a turbine system like the Tesla turbine to spin one of those little motors like that. You see what I'm saying? It's not just using what his most efficient use of the laws of physics on that two-stage oscillator, but it's also using physics when it comes to the point where how that Tesla turbine actually even functions. There's two plates inside there. Actually, you can put multiples in there, but those plates don't got wings or anything on it. It's just flat plates, and that pressure buildup in there is enough to cause that thing to turn. And actually, it does the same thing in some hydraulic clutches and stuff like that. When that water pressure or that fluid pressure pushes against those plates, it causes it to be able to basically lock together so that it can turn. You see what I mean? So there's all kinds of potentials just using all the different things that we know about physics to literally take and pick the best of every single thing that's going on out there to build a generator that's not going to be used in the same fashion that the modern day generators are used. Now, the easiest thing that I can think about doing as far as, the modern-day generators, if you could get the fuel source of those modern-day generators sorted out to where you was either burning water on there or any, vaporized fuel system where you make that thing more efficient, it's already ready to go on that side. My system would require... taking that energy and being able to transform it back down into something that modern day appliances would recognize. You see what I mean? You couldn't run your house directly off that power line outside, because if you tried, it'd burn your house down. If it wasn't for that step down transformer and the different service, like I got a 200 amp service on this, if it didn't step it down to that level and I turned something on in that house, and not only would I get lit up, but the house would get lit up in a ball of flames.
Right.
The frequency's too high. So it's being changed with the transformer. And so what I'm talking about doing isn't no different than what the power company's been doing all these years. They bring it up to a really high frequency, a high voltage, they send it out there, and basically you have to step it back down so that you can use it.
Right.
And all I'm talking about doing is basically the same thing. Moving it from point A to point B as rapidly as possible using the least amount of energy. See, if they did this the Edison's way, every time somebody turned a light on, those generators would bog down. And the more lights you got turned on, eventually that doggone thing ain't going to be able to push it anymore. It's going to be just an electromagnetic break on that side. It's going to stop. Or burn up, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Or both. All of the above. But with Tesla's AC current, that's how we were able to get around a few of the physics loopholes as far as I'm concerned. And so with that said, having a modern-day understanding of how electricity actually even functions, still to this day, it's all theoretical. But from what I can see from the deal, you can generate the same frequencies with resistors and transistors as you can mechanically. So that tells me there's something in common both there, and that I can get the high frequency that I need from either one to energize gas into the plasma state. And so if I'm not trying to pull directly off of that standard generator a load, I'm not going to allow those electrons to go back the other direction. I'm going to send them where I want them to go. It's still, even if you ain't got nothing plugged in, that energy is still being generated. You see what I mean? Those wires are live, and they're looking for a path to ground. And if the only path that they could find is some argon gas, it's going to energize that argon gas. You see what I mean? And the mercury arc rectifier that I kept talking about was how they were able to run the DC motors that Edison had already in place for elevators and stuff off of the high voltage AC that Tesla was making. And so that mercury arc rectifier started off with a dead short, heated up that mercury, vaporized the mercury into a gas, and then once it was vaporized into the gas, it was energized into the plasma state, pressurized inside the tube, only allowed electron flow in one direction, and so essentially they built a diode, a rectifier, a bridge rectifier, and was able to get that high voltage AC to run those high voltage DC. You see what I'm saying? Hello! Come out from under the bus!
No, you keep kicking me under here. I'm tired of getting kicked.
Well,
I have my mic muted. I had something that was going on here making noise, and I just forgot about unmuted.
Oh. Well, that technology for the...
The ruckus!
For the mercury arc rectifier, that is some old technology. Keep in mind, I don't like using mercury for obvious reason, because I don't want to be mad as a hatter. I do have some mercury, but I don't want to use it as far as, you know, for anything other than maybe making a mercury switch where you can turn things on and off whenever it tips off the level or whatever. You know, they had mercury switches in some of the old trunks of other old cars that whenever you raised your hood up, the mercury ball would roll over and make the circuit and turn the light on in the trunk. Yeah, nowadays they just got a little spring-loaded switch. Which a lot of times will go bad, because after somebody slams the door enough, it'll bust that little switch, and then now your light won't come on.
That's a lot less bad than slamming the door and busting that thing that the mercury's in that leaks out all over the place.
Yeah.
Ends up in the groundwater, and then some kid's drinking it.
Yeah, I agree. So that's one of the
things... Look, the water is so shiny!
That's one of the things... Yeah, and you wouldn't want to dive into a pool of mercury. That would hurt. Like diving into concrete. Anyway, yeah, we have learned things in the history of what not to do, like asbestos and mercury and lead and stuff like that. So we are learning some things. But as far as energy, I think that we're still in, I wouldn't necessarily say the caveman era, because we actually got some pretty cool stuff going on. But I'd say we're still in the wagon train days as far as electricity. Because we're still using old technology to do modern day stuff, because we ain't figured out a better way to do it. Now, even in the nuclear industry, they figured out how to boil water using radioactive material. Now, that's so old ancient technology with modern day discoveries that, in my view, is literally a dangerous mix. You should have never done that. You know, it's going to be the asbestos of the future, or the mercury or lead of the future. You see what I mean? As soon as they have a nuclear spill, then everybody goes crazy. But in the meantime...
I'll say, ask those people who are dealing with all the radiation that came from Chernobyl, and it ain't the future for them, it's now.
Well, there you go. So, why didn't they just learn from... Well, I guess they didn't have time to learn. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one that sees common sense, but if you already got the fire started, you don't run over and throw a can of gas on it for obvious reasons. You know, and they don't tell you not to carry gasoline in a glass container at for no reason at all. So, anyway, I'm just trying to point out that we actually do have options as far as how we use our energy. we can take, you know, according to the law of conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. However, it can be changed into different frequency ranges. And so all I'm saying is that instead of using it the way we've been using it, let's change that energy. And basically what you'd end up, what you'd end up with is a unit that would go in between you and your generator, so that you're going to use that generator at its maximum potential and its most efficient, its most efficiency, using less fuel, because it's not going to have to work so hard. And we're going to pull that energy off and then do what we want with it from that point on. Heat our water, light our house, or whatever. You see what I'm getting at there?
Mm.
Well, if you could also run that same generator off of water or wood gas, now you ain't got to worry about gasoline or crude oil. The internal combustion engine is a wonderful design. It's just not efficient. And it never has been, because it never was totally refined. If you, and I'm not saying to reinvent the wheel, but I'm saying to bring it up to standards where it actually could be. You know, like, for example, you know, the old engines back during the Model T days, as opposed to the modern day fuel injection systems that they got going on. That's, you see what I'm saying there?
Why are you stopping?
Huh?
Why are you stopping again?
What do you mean I'm stopping?
That, you see what I'm saying, and you're throwing me under the bus there.
Oh, well, I'm trying just to open a dialogue. Trying to
keep
open
going.
A dialogue.
For what? You're busy carrying the torch there. Will you want me to hold the other end of the torch?
No.
One of us is going to get burnt.
Light the match. All right, look, anyway, basically
look,
what I'm saying...
Quit throwing gasoline on the torch.
Yeah, that would... See, that's an example right there, because that's set fire to somebody's hair, or somebody get hurt doing that.
Especially somebody with wild hair.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is, like, even the modern day engines are super inefficient. It is so frustrating. And yesterday,
I think the problem is not the engine that's inefficient. It's actually the delivery system for the engine. Because you got, like, you know, what Raymond keeps going on about vaporization before ignition.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
before even injecting it, so that way, whatever that your vaporization process wasn't able to fully vaporize, has to go through decompression to finish vaporizing it.
Yeah.
Is that piston's being pulled down?
I'm saying combined as a whole. We know the flaw is in the basically the input, the fuel that you're actually using. The way that you're using that fuel is the flaw. The internal combustion engine by itself is an amazing piece of engineering, and if used properly to feed the fuel in there, well, you're not feeding too much. I had an episode yesterday where I actually had to take my cousin home because my cousin's daughter home because her car had a problem. The airflow meter and the throttle position sensor weren't talking to each other, and so when she stepped her foot on the gas, that was all it took. As soon as she stepped her foot on the gas, one of the two was saying that they ain't getting enough of what it needs, so it was injecting more fuel into that motor, and that motor would begin to race at a high RPM. And she was
like
actually...
it didn't just flood.
Yeah, well, it didn't flood. It was still getting enough air, but it was basically like keeping your foot completely on the floor. The problem was... she was having to use her brakes in order to try to hold the car back just to try to drive. And every so often, and when she'd come up on a red light, she'd have to make a quick turn to one direction or another to go down a different street because she couldn't stop the doggone thing. And so, basically, the way that they got them all designed, it's...
Sounds like a Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah, it's a wreck waiting to happen.
You slow down, you blow up.
Yeah. So So I gave her a ride home and told them they need to go tow that thing, you know, to the house, put it on a trailer and take it back. Somebody's going to get hurt with that dang car. But that's just to show you that modern-day technology can fail in a way that makes it just going to have a catastrophic failure. You know, it's either going to blow that engine up or it's going to cause somebody to get in doggone wreck. But if you had control of that fuel to begin with, and you were vaporizing it, where you could instantaneously shut that vapor off if something went wrong, it wouldn't get no more fuel, and it wouldn't be able to race out of control. So there's a lot of systems that are built into modern-day cars that basically are safety factors that, you know, for case something goes wrong, they got sensors for just about everything under the sun, including if your gas cap isn't on tight enough, it ain't getting enough pressure inside the tank or whatever.
I want to know why they don't have sensors to let you know when somebody's in the back seat that ain't supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Hey, there's a good invention right there. Build you a pressure deal where if somebody sits in the back seat or hides in the floorboard and you're going to try to get the drop on you as soon as you start.
Yeah, I would say just the seat. If you've looked at a modern car, there ain't no floorboard. You barely have room to put your feet down. They're not going to be able to squeeze down there.
Well, you need a
I like the old cars that had a big bench that you sat on, nothing but open floor underneath it.
You need a James Bondish kind of deal inside the back of that seat so that if the passenger's not one that's supposed to be there, then you can just reach down and hit a little button or something like that, and the boxing glove comes out of the back of the front seat and pops them in the mug. You know what I mean? Or an airbag, you know.
I'd say just tear all that carpet out of the floorboard and wire up the springs in the seat and the floorboard with high voltage so that it just shocks them right in the butt, through the feet, out the butt.
That's some futuristic Mad Max kind of stuff, man. Kind of like those guys that, I don't know if you ever saw them, there's these practical jokers out there, which on one hand I think, you know, it's going a little too far because it could actually get somebody hurt. But they've been tying like a bicycle to a rope and then tying the rope to the tree so that whenever they leave the bicycle by itself, somebody will come out and try to steal the bicycle. Well, once they get on it, they're obviously not paying attention because they don't notice the rope being tied to the tree. So they'll take off riding and then, you know, the rope will tense up and they'll fly over the top of the handlebars. I'm surprised they ain't killed more people doing that, you know, or even a worse, you know, lesser deal, I guess, would be breaking their arm or something like that. I mean, it's kind of harsh, but on one hand...
For a bike thief?
Yeah.
It depends on how important that bike is to you. honestly, you know, come on, man.
He shouldn't have taken the bike.
They decide, oh, well, you know, I understand you work to earn this bike, and it's... You know, you went through all the effort and everything to get this bike and get it to into your possession, but I need it more than you do, so I'm just going to take it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a
toss-up. Who do they think they are, Uncle Sam?
It's kind of like a toss-up. On one hand, I feel bad because it's a human flying over the deal, but on the other hand, there's like a slapstick comedy value of it, and then on the other hand, it's like, you know, you shouldn't have done it to begin with, you know? So... It's hard to say, you know. Being a nice guy, it's kind of hard to say, you know, who's right and who's wrong. And you can see both points of view on the deal. But either way, you know, that's pretty brutal. They actually wired an airbag to the seat of it in one of the videos, and they had it remotely discharged. And so, basically, you launched the thief off the off the seat. On one hand, it's funny, but on the other hand, it's not, you know. I don't know.
Well, you think about it. If that bike is the only mode of transportation that can get somebody from point A to point B in time to solve a situation, it could be something as important as somebody having to get from where they're at to where they need to basically do a surgery or something before that somebody there dies. So the bike thief has killed another person by stealing that bike.
Yeah,
you know,
and
you got the butterfly effect where basically they impede somebody just a little bit so that eventually one day way down the road they're, you know, not in preparation to say they were going to become a doctor. But because of that, they basically ended up not being able to keep the funds up or whatever because they lost a job or something that they were going to.
Yeah.
Using the bike, expecting it to be there. And because of not having the money, they can't finish paying for the schooling, so they end up dropping their classes, and now they're not a doctor. They're out digging ditches.
So in a sense, it's instantaneous karma. You know, bam, you stole this bike and you wiped out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, just maybe, they might have learned a valuable lesson, like before you go stealing the bike, at least look and see if there's a rope. Oh, man, this world is so upside down, Thomas. It's nuts. I mean, the best thing would be to never steal the bike to begin with. The best thing would be never to be greedy to begin with. I mean, we got all the resources we need throughout this planet that if everybody did the right thing, you wouldn't have all these issues that we keep talking about. You know, the wars and the ignorance going on in this world. You know, and the hindrance to education isn't just by the global elite. The hindrance to the education is actually from the average Joe themselves. You know, when a person gets it in their mind that the book says, and that's all there is to it, that's because the book said or the teacher said, and they're
that's
not...
kind of a little bit of a problem with religion. Well, this book says this, so that's what we're going to go by. It doesn't matter that science proved it wrong.
Well, according to the Mandela effect, the doggone thing's being changed anyway, so I don't know, man. You know what? If you haven't looked it up, look up the Mandela effect. It ain't just about Looney Tunes and what your favorite deal was spelled like that back in the day. This world is just, you know, it's warped. It's wrong, you know. And so science in itself can't disprove God, whereas religion can't prove God. And so we're still all looking for answers to the final deal is that, you know, are we living
There's not the problem. Looking for answers is not the problem. Demanding answers is the problem.
Well, how are you going to demand answers to a universe you know nothing about?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so that's why I'm saying, until...
You have to be a fool to do so.
Until all the facts are in, I'm going to remain where I'm at so I can just, you know, maintain. I can't say I'm totally right, and I can't say I'm totally wrong. I think we're all right in our own ways, but I think that we just ain't got the every bit of the puzzle together. We don't have all the pieces, and until we know what actually occurred or who actually flipped on the switch back in the beginning of time, you know, I'm gonna take the route that sounds most plausible and comfortable to me. You know, the Big Bang slash...
That's not the important issue. The important issue is to let other people make their choice, too, and not decide to burn them at a cross or something because of that.
Well, I agree. Everybody's got to walk their own journey. But at some point, our paths have got to come together at the end. You know, we're all going to come to the same place. No matter whether you believe in a higher power or not, we're all going to end up in the same place. You're born, and then someday you die. Mm-hmm. All right, and so eventually we're going to either end up back as part of the Earth itself, or we're going to be end up in some, you know, alternate dimension, or, you know, standing at the pearly gates hoping to get in, or down there in the gates of hell, or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's this journey that we're on right now that we're wasting at an alarming rate. I mean, there's so much technology out there that we have access to, and if we could actually get together and do these things... On one hand, you got people out there crying out loud that we've got to save the planet and we got to stop this man-made global warming slash climate change. But on the other hand, you got nothing but hindrances from not just the elite of the world, but from the corporations and the average Joe and himself. It's nuts. It is just flat nuts. If the government says that you got to reduce your carbon footprint and you show them how, but they basically just gaff you off like, that'll never work. And you ask them, why, did you try it? And they're like, well, no, because it'll never work. That's what the school book says. You know, or so many scientists say. And I'm saying, you know, if you got a tragedy on the way, you don't discount any option. You try it all. Everything. under the sun. You exhaust every single option available and then some, and then even after you're down to your last deal until the fat lady actually sings and the earth implodes in on itself from CERN or explodes from nuclear holocaust or gets hit by Planet X or whatever. You exhaust every single possible option in order to save yourself before it's all over and doomsday is here, because it's already too late to fix things when the mess has already been made. You're now cleaning things up, if that's even remotely possible.
Steve put something in the chat. It's a bicycle, close up of a bicycle tire with a note attached to it. It says, apologies, stole your bike last night in final chapter of an export-fueled rampage. Smooth ride, though. Great bike choice. 10 of 10. Would steal again.
Well, at least some crooks got a sense of humor and a little bit of honesty to them. Brought the bike back. Right. If somebody wanted to borrow my bike, that's one thing, as long as they want to bring it back in good shape. But a lot of these guys that were getting thrown off the bike from the rope being tied to the tree, their intentions weren't to bring it back.
Yeah, when they get done using it, if they stole it, usually they'll just basically like leave it somewhere, like in a ditch or under an overpass or something. I've had that happen. Had to go get my bike from somebody who found it under an overpass. They stole it out of my garage too.
Well, the good book said, "Thou shalt not steal." I'm gonna stick to the good book. I ain't gonna steal.
Mm-hmm. What about if they stole it from you?
Then I have to literally, I wouldn't necessarily be stealing, but I'd probably have to go to the extent to steal it back, as in I gotta burglarize my own bike back or something. But in reality, I'm not stealing it because it was mine to begin with. So I don't know. I call this show Mad Science for a reason. I see all kinds of possibilities that could literally bring us farther into the future to where nobody is doing without. And if you can get past all the con artists out there trying to give you or sell things to you or get things from you, and basically get together and start building real devices, then I see a future where we could actually have electricity for those who want it over in what they classify as third world countries. You know, I don't see no third world countries. I just see some people doing without unnecessarily. You know, it's not that they don't have the same resources over there, and some of them have better resources, but they're still poor. It's ridiculous. You know, if you've got somebody over there and they got a gold mine or a diamond mine and you want that thing so bad you can taste it, at least be honest with them and say, hey, if you let us mine this these diamonds over here that we want, we'll put you some electricity over here and some running water for free. You know? But no, it don't go down like that. They go over there and they just basically steal the resources, take it for themselves, and try to tell them, oh, well, you know, we're trying to get the industrial societies out here down to your level so you all be dirt poor and living in mud huts. So that's fair, right? As long as they're doing as bad as you, then...
I guess there's truth in advertising. There's a reason why they call it grassroots movement.
Yeah, that's where they want to put you, down in the grass.
Living in a grass hut,
and unfortunately,
made out of mud. So basically, you're having to use the part that the root came from too, grass and roots.
Unfortunately, because people been jacking with nature and doing things that aren't really natural, such as pesticide and this and that, we've actually come down to a point in history. I remember when I was a child, I used to be able to lay directly in the grass. And I wouldn't get bombarded with chiggers or fleas or ticks or anything like that. I could lay in the grass. I could roll around the grass all day long. I could take a nap out in the grass. And it was like laying on the carpet, you know. Every once in a while, a bee or a fly would come by and hassle you. But for the most part, you were perfectly safe laying in the grass. Try that these days, man. Go out there and lay down in the grass and see if you don't come up there itching like a banshee, you know. Yeah, like... skeeters and ticks and fleas and whatever. It's like the doggone apocalypse out there, man. You can't sit on a lawn chair without little sweat bees coming over biting on you, or big giant horseflies jumping on your back trying to draw blood, or a skeeter on your neck, or a tick trying to crawl down your leg, or whatever. You know, that's not right. If this world is that miserable, ain't no wonder why people don't want to go outside anymore. But in reality, if you work in harmony with nature, then nature will work in harmony with you. You know? Something's going on. I just call it the apocalypse. It's hotter than Hades one day and colder than heck the other day. It's raining like heck for 40 days and 40 nights.
Yeah, I'm not getting this whole hotter and colder than this pit with fire in it that everybody keeps talking about. Like, is it cold or is it hot? Come on, man, make up your mind.
All right, well, there's a saying back whenever I was a kid, it's colder than a well digger's booty. Because as you get down in the ground, is that like 40 feet down, you're digging it, it's cold down there.
No, at least you didn't say anything about a witch's breast there.
Oh, no, I didn't want to go that route. I can get slapped for that one. No, I'm just saying, you know, it's extremes. It's either, you know, one or the other. And I'm just saying that nature is not very happy with mankind. And if that's the case, then maybe we should rethink the way that we're doing things. You know, if you really want the doggone so-called clean, renewable, green energy, then help those folks out there who say it is possible, as opposed to the ones that are sitting there being negative Nancys and saying, no, you can't do that because. Well, I understand you're saying that I can't do that because, but where did you get your information? Was it from that same school book that other guy over there said it can't be done because? You know, on one hand, we talk about the Mandela effect as Mandela, he was supposedly died in prison is what a lot of people remember in their mind, but yet here he is dying again in 2013 or somewhere around about. And so, you know, how could a guy die twice unless there was some sort of rip in the time-space continuum? And why is it things were spelled this way on certain things back in history, but yet they're spelled differently now? What happened? And, you know, why is all this, these little subtle differences that a lot of people remember are different? So, if these people are out there and they're believing in this effect that machinery like such as CERN out there, the Big Hadron Collider that's smashing particles into each other, opening potentially gateways and parallel dimensions, but yet they can't believe it's possible for electricity to be free. So I'm a nutcase for trying to say what I'm saying, but they're right on, because the so-called global elite / Illuminati have all this secret space technology and been traveling through time and interdimensional travel and all that kind of stuff. But I tell somebody about free electricity, I'm stupid? Seriously? It makes me want to become...
Why is she still talking?
Yeah! Well, Hank showed up. How you doing, Hank? Oh, man. All I'm saying is, look, we supposedly went to Mars. We supposedly went to Pluto. We went to space with all kinds of probes. We stood on the planet of the moon, or we stood on the moon's surface, and went there multiple times, and then ain't been back since. And we did all this stuff, and we got nuclear powers. We got all kinds of different electronics technology, lasers. You know, at one time, lasers were science fiction, but now they're science fact. You can have a handheld laser that'll burn through wood and even more, you know. But you talk about running a car on water, then you get the crooked eye from the common Joe, and you get the crooked eye from the government. It's like, oh yeah, we know that water's made of oxygen and hydrogen, and separately they're dangerous, but don't do it. And the other saying, well, it can't be done because it takes too much energy to get it. I don't get it. We sent a probe to Pluto with a piece of plutonium that made a thermal generator that would produce over 200 watts. It was gone for 9 years. 9 years. It was going through the vacuum of space, through all the brutality of all the quasars and the solar flares and the radiation and all the craziness out in space, micrometeorites and big meteorites. It dodged everything under the sun, and it made it all the way down there so far away that when you look back, the sun looks like a dot in the sky. And we were able to send a picture from that planet down there all the way back, digitize it, and put it out there on the internet for all to see. Yet, electricity ain't free. By the time it got there 9 years later, it still was capable of producing 200 watts and running all the equipment on board enough to take a picture, send it back with one of the most impressive radio technology I've ever heard about in my life, because I can only talk from my cell phone to the closest tower, which may be the equivalence of 5 miles maximum, if that. Your average walkie-talkie will only go a quarter mile. Your average citizen's band radio, the old AM versions of it, would go 5 miles unless you had a linear on there, and you could talk clear to Mexico with that thing with a 300-watt linear. And during days where they called it skip, you could actually bounce that signal off the ionosphere and then go even further. So that's as far as you can get with what we got here down on the ground, but what they sent out there to Pluto and Mars, that's a long distance, brothers and sisters of the world. That is a long way to make a phone call. Ain't no wires attached in between all that. You're sending a signal so far away that if you look back and you can see the sun looks like a dot in the sky, then that's one powerful transmitter. I want one. The FCC probably have me hanging upside down in some sort of dungeon 50,000 miles below the planet or something. What do you think?
I know you want to help, but this is getting out of control.
Well, yeah, it is. I agree, Hank. But how much can you take? When you talk about mad science, you're sitting there looking at the common sense of everything out there. You know, you can run a lawnmower on propane, Hank. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't run it on water, even though people have done it. I'm just saying.
What are you talking about?
You mean to tell me you ain't been listening?
My God, are you still talking?
Yeah, and you know, like sometimes some of the guys that come on the Mad Science Show, they'll miss the whole first part of the show and then drop in at the very last minute, ain't got a clue what we're talking about, and then they'll ask us what we're talking about. That kind of sounds like what Hank just did.
Yeah, and you just have to,
shut up, I'm talking here.
Yeah, but there's a difference between talking and saying something as opposed to nothing. You could talk forever and never say a thing, you know?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is we need common sense to rule this world. We don't need all this craziness.
Mm.
We know how to vaporize fuel and make it burn more efficiency. We know how to use how to separate different molecules to get different kinds of chemistry. We know how to mix chemistry. We know how to turn crude oil into plastic, for Pete's sake. We know how to melt sand into glass. We know how to forge all kinds of iron ore dust into steel working tools, carbon treated heavy duty tools. And all this technology is not something that just happened overnight, and so it's been around for a long time. What we haven't figured out how to do, according to the way that we're at right now, we're in the year 2016, getting ready to go into the year 2017, and we're still talking about stupid stuff like nuclear power and global warming slash climate change slash climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Son, you're teasing the gorilla in the monkey house.
Yeah, right now I am. And I guess I'm going to have to keep on.
I was talking about the nuclear power there, I think.
Yeah. Well, think about this for a second. You got radioactive material boiling water turning steam turbines. All right. Well, they did that back in the old days with coal. And whereas coal might leave a black cloud up over the top and everybody be hollering about carbon emissions, at least you didn't have to worry about radioactive fallout if the thing exploded. You just have some black soot on your face and maybe a black lung disease like they had back during the coal mining days whenever they were down there before they knew about respirators and at least the little paper mask that you put over your face to keep the particulates out of your lungs. You know? Now, there's ways to burn coal more efficiently. You can break that coal down into a fine, super fine powder and burn it all instead of having any waste coming up out of the top. And even that, if you did have waste coming out of the top, if you can take a catalytic converter to try to burn off some of the fuel that's being wasted in an internal combustion engine, why couldn't you do the same thing for coal? You know, it's just going to reburn it. And in the process of reburning it, you could take that extra temperature and use that for thermoelectrics or even heat and water, for Pete's sake. So, instead of burning it once or maybe even twice with the catalytic converter, why not keep reburning the same doggone deal over and over? Until you burn it all away.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. But, you know, instead, no, let's just take a, let's dig up this uranium and let's highly refine it into, you know, these really hot rods. And then we'll put these hot rods down in water and we'll actually have to make another control rod that'll block out this so it doesn't actually, you know, get all the power to the water. And, you know, if anything goes wrong, then we got some sort of defense mechanism. It's funny. As I mentioned this on another show, but I was watching this video and everybody was freaking out. Oh my God, 10 of the control rods fell down into the reactor. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, they're all freaking out thinking that the doggone reactor is going to blow up. They didn't even know what a control rod did. I got on some of the YouTube videos and I asked them, I said, do you even know what a control rod is for? No. They're magnetically held up there. There's a whole bundle of them. They're magnetically held up above the core of the nuclear reactor. And in case of a power outage, the electromagnet will drop those rods down inside the core. And what that does is keeps that core from overheating. By blocking out that signal, the control rods absorb the energy coming off of those deals so that it doesn't overheat, and then you end up basically in with a giant hydrogen explosion with radioactive hot steam. And so, if ten control rods fall down in there, that only does one thing. It makes that less efficient as far as how they're running that piece of machinery. You see what I'm saying? But that's
sort of.
That's the difference between knowing what the doggone machinery is and how it functions as opposed to not knowing, panicking.
You gonna panic for some global warming?
Yeah. I know. I go watch the video how to properly panic. I already showed everybody how to do that. You know, and it's, you know, it's a, what do you call that? It's a survival technique that you can take anywhere with you. And maybe not as good as the Heimlich maneuver, but it still works. It relieves the stress of global warming. So if you're panicking, that's all you got to do. Alright, so anyway, so back to that Howard Drive motor. There's something going on inside that hard drive motor. When you spin that thing up, the way the magnetic field is interacting with the small amount of copper inside there, if you can imagine being able to duplicate that either electronically or even on a smaller scale mechanically, to where you got an electric motor that's actually spinning the shaft, the generator inside a generator, essentially. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility, but the ones that, if you look up red line generators, they have these generators that are 12 volts to 120 volts AC at 500 watts. They use these on the back of utility vehicles to run lights at night. So it's obviously you don't want to be working on a power line unless you got a good lighting system in the middle of the night. And so they'll have these onboard generating systems that they'll have heavy amp alternators on their truck that are running these things that are keeping the lights going so you can run AC tools or even lighting systems on these trucks mobily. So it's been done before. They're not as efficient as they could be because they're not designed to be self-running or self-contained or anything like that. They're back in the old days when I first started looking into alternative energy, I was thinking, why isn't it you couldn't build an electric motor that would run an electric generator head that would basically, once you got that generator going, be able to produce enough energy that you could run back into the electric motor and get that thing to be self-running, self-charging. But then the laws of physics stepped in the way. And so it said that, you know, you get so many losses that you can never get out more than you put in. So once you start trying to drain energy off of that, you're going to have the same effect over on the opposite side. And it's going to be fighting itself until it drains itself down and it won't run or charge the battery. You can't put out enough energy to charge the battery. But the more I watch all these people like Lid Motor and Laser Saber, Laser Hacker, and Ryan Abrams and Terry Woodruff and all the different people out there in alternative energy, and the more efficiency that I see them getting out of stuff, the at the very least, I'm seeing them extend the battery life, you know? And if any extension of that battery life is, in my view, a step forward to actually getting it done to where you could run this thing by itself. You start the generator up, leave it running, and it produces all the electricity that you want until, you know, you shut it down. And the only time you would have to shut it down is if you heard a squeak or something, the magnetic bearing were getting too hot or something like that. You know, so you had to shut it down to maintain it or whatever. Put some oil on it. Maybe you make a automatic oiler and don't have to maintain it for hundreds of years. Who knows? But either way, I still believe it's possible if it's engineered properly. You know? We know that there's a lot of energy coming out of that doggone hard drive motor. It's been done. And somebody else out there, the guy I mentioned earlier on this video, and I can't even find the doggone deal there. Hard drive turbine. Alright. Geo Shoemaker? Yeah. He actually saw my video. He took the idea and he run with it. That's the biggest honor to me right there. The fact that he didn't just totally discount it, you know. He took it and, you know, that's a pretty amazing deal. And so now he's going to see how far he can take that deal as far as making a turbine or making it more efficient, to see how far he can take that. And that is what is all been about all along, is to getting guys like that right there to take an idea and run with it. Because he's got talent, he's got knowledge, and he's out there sharing it with people out there, and that's how things get done. That's the whole purpose of mad science, folks. You know, it's not to just sit around and complain about why we can't get free energy. It's to sit around and prove that we already got what we need for free energy. We just got to get people motivated to do it. It's as simple as that. If I had access to the tools and the technology that I need, it would have been done as far as I'm concerned. Because that's what my grandpa used to say, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I find myself limited in my resources as far as machinery or even manufacturing skills because of one thing. Finances is always going to be the underlying thing. But it's also when I give my word about something, about free energy, I'm not out here trying to sell anybody out anything. I'm not out here trying to take credit for anybody else's work or anything like that. And I don't want my name smudged around because of some, you know, hoodoo voodoo, you gotta love your reactor kind of technology. If you're a jerk, you don't get no free electricity. Ain't the way it works. And so I'm pointing out all these ideas, hoping that the rest of the world will run with them and make this stuff happen. You know? And I'm not going to ask anybody for any doggone money. Period. And the reason behind that whole deal is, you know, I said something. I aim to prove it. Electricity is free. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. It's not that the energy's not there, it's just that you're not taking that energy that you have access to and putting it into a form of energy that will be recognized by all the inefficient appliances that we use today. Everything we use is inefficient. The way the transformers are designed, the way that the machinery, if it's like what Thomas said earlier about the doggone internal combustion engine. The internal combustion engine is an amazing engineered piece of machinery. But the way you feed that is the Achilles heel, so to speak. It's the flaw in the system. The way you're feeding that machine. If you feed it vapor as opposed to a liquid, it's obvious that that vapor is going to burn better than a liquid. And you're going to burn more of that fuel. The faster you step on that gas pedal, the faster that engine's turning, and the less time that that fuel has to burn. And so, as you go faster, you're going to have to cut the fuel back and back and back until you get to the point where you finally reach its own singularity and it can't go any faster. You think I'm wrong, Thomas? No?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure where we're even going now.
Well, we're on the same thing, trying to figure out where that energy initially came from. What is actually occurring inside there that is able to take a little bitty hard drive motor, and just because you spin the RPMs up, are able to reach a really super high frequency that you can energize, LEDs with at the very least, and gas into plasma, and at some point be able to take that energy back into doing exactly what we're talking about, giving everybody free electricity. That's the ultimate goal, that people wouldn't have to be beholden to a power company and buying electricity. You can imagine, in my house...
Hey, you're talking about not being beholden to a company for your power?
Yeah.
But the fact is, you have more than just energy that you're beholden to somebody for. And the people who own the power company, the ones that are actually pulling the strings, own more than a power company.
Oh yeah, they probably own
the
stock and everything.
So you cut the strings there, you cut the strings there, they'll tighten the strings elsewhere.
Yeah.
So you gotta basically cut all the strings and do it all at once so they don't have a chance to Shanghai you in the middle of trying to cut the next set of strings. Choke you out before you have a chance to free everybody completely.
Well, there are people in this world, believe it or not, conspiracy theory or not, there are people in this world who do not want free electricity. For obvious reasons. You know, are you going to put me out of a job if you come up with free electricity? That's the line man talking. Maybe not. Maybe you'll still need to run some power for the government's electricity. You know? Or the person working down at the power plant. Well, you're going to put me out of a job. No, you just send your electricity to the government.
Well, the other thing, too, is that why do you have to do that job? Why can't you do something else?
Yeah.
Maybe something you don't have to climb on the top of a pole, and you can actually get more value out of your time and therefore basically be able to obtain more stuff from the same amount of work.
Or maybe
then you're able to now, you know.
Maybe you take your vast amount of knowledge for all the years that you have been doing what you're doing and take all that knowledge that you've learned with everybody else's acquired knowledge and be one of the engineers to actually make this a possibility so that you yourself won't have to pay an electric bill when you go home. Because, believe it or not, the power company employees, they still have to pay for electricity. You know, there ain't no benefit of being a power company employee. Maybe they give them such a little discount or something like that. But I don't.
Well, and no matter what, your best source of internet service is still coming through a line too.
Yep.
So
there you go. Still gonna need linemen. And you know, if you're gonna distribute that electricity from one neighbor to the next, you might have to hire a professional to run a line for you. You know, like I want to share my free electricity with my neighbor. I can't just obviously run an extension cord across the ground over to his house for obvious purposes.
Why not? People do it all the time.
Well, I'm sure. But if you live in a homeowners association, you're not going to run a cord to the next neighbor's house.
Well, you just got to make sure it's a green extension cord so it looks like the grass.
Oh,
that way you're not disturbing the aesthetic.
That's good, but when Joe Nosey comes walking through your doggone lawn when he's trying to see what you got hiding behind your house and trips over the cord, then he's gonna want to sue you because you got a wire that just made him hurt on your property.
Well,
you got to get past the stupid before we can get into the common sense. Why live in a homeowners association to begin with? Because we all want to live in a safe, quiet neighborhood, and we got certain colors that we like, but we don't like we don't want your chartreuse or plaid house next to our, you know, whatever. You can't paint your house red, white, and blue.
Sandstone and pea green.
Yeah, you can't make a flower pot out of a toilet
green.
In the front lawn.
Yeah.
Hey, looks like Jermaine.
Matter of something looking like it's plaid. Why does it got to look like Kermit the Frog?
Looks like Jermaine Fishwick just popped up in the chat room. You have to go back and listen to the podcast if you haven't been listening to hear what I said about you. Anyway, I'm just saying, right now people are their worst enemy for freedom. They're the worst enemy for finance. And, there's folks out there that take advantage of that. The power companies, they're making money hand over fist. You know, mm-hmm. And it don't matter whether they burn it on coal or gas or water, they're still going to be in control of the power line, and they're still going to make the money. You know, I'm saying the average Joe needs to get educated and get with your networks in your local communities and build things with one another. Do the testing that it takes. You know, hydrogen technology is real. Stan Myers did it, you know. Tesla technology is real. It's been done. All these out there, you know, there's so many different alternative energy devices out there. The Lord Kelvin generator, basically falling water, produces a static charge. The Wimshurst is a couple discs with some atmosphere between them building up a charge. The Van de Graaff generator is using a friction of two different types of materials to build up a static charge. Just like rubbing your feet on the carpet, man. You do it long enough, you get a massive charge build up, and that charge is going to go somewhere, whether it be on the tip of your brother's ear or his nose or whatever. You know, there's power there. The atmospheric group put a couple hundred-foot poles up in the air, 200-foot poles, I believe it is, and they run a line across there with some carbon nanotubes on that one line. And they're pulling like 2,000 volts out of the air, and it ain't no mechanical to it. It's basically just pulling the charge out of the air, and then they're running it down into huge capacitor banks and ending up with 9,000 volts out on the other side. So, I think Jermaine's got a question in the chat room. Well, type it in there, brother. I'm doing just fine. The Barlow's wheel. I'm not familiar with the Barlow's wheel. Are you familiar with the Barlow's wheel?
Mm-hmm.
That's a new one. See, even I hadn't heard of all the different devices out there. I, you know, there's actually one guy that had carbon inside a glass, and he had a handle on this glass, and he was able to take and spin this glass ball around, and the carbon rubbing up his side inside this glass would build up a static charge on the glass. So they was calling it one of the first forms of electricity, which essentially it's moving energy from one way or another. So as far as I'm concerned, it is electricity, you know, static electricity, whatever, you know. And so we know how to get it, but do you
throw your hands up in the air when you say whatever?
Sometimes
we just can't see it.
Yeah, I'm like really animated whenever I'm behind the microphone. We should like add video to this deal, because then you can really see the excitement on my face when I'm getting all riled up, especially when I start talking about the global warming freaks, because that really gets on my nerves. I'm boxing in the air like if they were standing right next to me. You don't get too close when he's talking. And I'm not so sure I'm not even spitting when I start yelling. So, it might be good that I'm just not on video or even behind a closed door so nobody gets harmed in the process. Nobody was harmed in the process of Shaziz Mad Science Show today. Now, somebody's feelings might have got hurt. Well, I'm gonna have to Google this Barlow's wheel, because I don't know if I've ever seen it. Let's see, let me find the Google here.
Did you find the Google?
Yeah. B-A-R-L-O-W Barlow's wheel. All right.
Wow, she just like made up a name and threw it out there just to get you looking.
Oh, well, you know what I see? What I see going on right there is a spark gap, an awesome rotary spark gap. And so if this thing is doing what I think it's doing, it's also not only building up a static charge, but acting as a spark gap as well. That's pretty cool. I'm going to have to bookmark that. Hey, thanks for sharing that with me, Jermaine. That's pretty cool. I'm going to look more into that. See, like I said, there's so much technology out there, some of which have been around for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. And yet, here we are, year 2016, talking about alternative energy when we should already be there. We should already be done with it. You know, we should be actually moving on to something new.
Ben did it.
Yeah, been done it. Wait, I wonder how Hank would have said that one. Well, are you still talking?
Why is he still talking?
But, these things like that, see, and that's another reason why Shaziz Radio Network is doing what we're doing, is because he just popped in there and showed me something I had never seen before, you know? And when I first looked at the photo there on the Barlow's wheel, I saw potential right out of the gate. I mean, it's an awesome rotary spark gap, and you can time it out, spin it up, or slow it down however you want. But if this is also a static generator at the same time, that's even better yet, because now each one of these little arms off of this deal, or spikes, or whichever one there's different versions of it going on here. Those, you could turn the generator to get the static build up, and as it finds the shortest path to ground, you know, it's going to start arcing across. You could pulse Tesla coils with that doggone thing. You could pulse a Tesla coil with a Van de Graaff generator or Wimshurst, any static generator. You know, it's just the timing is going to be in the spark gap itself. So, there you go, and that's how you get the frequency ranges. The reason why I want to go as far as I can with high voltage is because the higher the voltage, the higher the frequency range, the more rapidly that thing wants to go. And I got a ceiling at some point to where I can tune it back down. I know my lowest point, the lowest I can go before I got high voltage, and I want to know the highest point that I can go before high voltage. Everything within that range now is the radio tuner, like a ham radio. You can sit there and you can adjust that in between channels and find frequency after frequency, or the old what do they call them doggone radios that they used to listen into, all the different radio stations, ham radios, and doggone it, I got one down in the lab.
Oh, I don't know about that. I know, what is it, AM? You can use a crystal radio to listen to things?
Yeah, but this one here is one that's actually was designed to listen into all kinds of ham radios and different...
Shortwave radio?
Yeah, there you go, shortwave. You could sit there and tune this thing into so many different frequencies, and then you could actually flip a switch and go up to a higher range of frequencies, and you could sit there and listen to all the things, all the different radio stations out there from some of way, way far away. You know, I was listening to Russia in my basement one day, you know, off this shortwave radio system. But so from the lowest voltage, that the lowest point where I can produce high voltage, to the highest point where I can go safely with high voltage, there is a tuning range in there that are so many different frequencies that have capabilities beyond your wildest imagination. You know, there are radio frequencies out there that literally will cause you to hallucinate. Did you know that? There are radio frequencies out there that will literally cause you to feel like your skin's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
There are radio frequencies out there such as a microwave. If you're in front of a microwave, you're in danger because water is the biggest part of your body going on in there. It's a dipole molecule, and you'll boil yourself just like you would be a cup of coffee in the microwave oven. So all these different frequencies, you know, there's a... They call it the Hertz range. And I'm saying if it hurts, it's wrong. You know what I mean? So you want to find those frequencies out there. Like, you know, there's research out there. Raymond Rife, we've mentioned on the show before. And there's other people out there that do, like, sound frequencies for making the person feel better. You know, like, there's some people out there that have a squeaky voice that will just get under your skin. It's like fingers on a chalkboard. You know, you just don't resonate with them. And there's some people, when they start talking, you just can't seem to like them for some reason. They don't have no charisma or something. But I believe that has to do with the tone, how it's coming out, you know. The singer as opposed to the guy that's singing off key. You see what I'm saying? The bad rhythm as opposed to the good one. Anyway, that's electricity in a nutshell. That's energy transfer in a nutshell. You got so many different ranges of frequency out there, from all the way into the positive realm, all the way into the negative realm, to infinity and beyond. And our capabilities should be such as, at this point in time, we should know a whole lot more about frequencies and stuff like that. And when I say frequencies, I'm talking about literally being able to manipulate the electromagnetic spectrums, including light, being able to use lasers to carry a wave with it. You know, Laser Hacker did a video where he took a laser and basically made a wireless radio transmitter where the light was actually telling the other side to play the music. So, you know, it can be done. Bunch of light flashes. What do you call those? Photoelectric cell on the other side was picking up those flashes of light and turning it back into electrical current that then in turn was turned back into an audible sound that you could actually hear the music that was being played down the road. See what I mean? Did you turn your microphone off again?
Yep.
All right.
I was going to say, you're bouncing a laser off of somebody's window, so while they're talking inside, making the air pressure change on the window, you can actually hear what they're saying.
Yeah. And unless they actually see the light, then it's not even detectable. So you could take a light wave that in the infrared spectrum and do the same exact thing, and they would never even see so much as a visible light on that deal. Unless of course they put something that was interacting with the infrared spectrum, like, you know, You got your window made out of some sort of crystalline structure where now if somebody shines an infrared light at your window, you'll see it. You know, an infrared laser or something like that. You'll actually see the beam through that glass. So, that's, if we're talking about technology, space age, man. The doggone remote control that people got sitting around watching Dancing with the Stars or Who Wants to Be a Zillionaire or whatever it is going to be next week, you know. All-star wrestling or the MMA fights where everybody's out there beating each other toothless. I think there's a certain segment of society that just wants to be entertained. They don't care about where their energy comes from as long as they can walk over to the light switch and turn the power on. I don't think they care. I think they're more interested in other things out there in this world. But the folks that do care, the folks that see that there's a need out there for people in what they classify as third world countries to be able to live as comfortably and maybe even possibly have themselves a remote, be able to enjoy the AC and the fresh water. Until the scales of justice are balanced out for everybody on this planet, I can't rest because it just drives me nuts knowing that somebody going to bed hungry is somebody who wants a home, is sleeping under a bridge, or there's some sort of war fighting over some sort of oil or resource across the world that we've got here, or we, you know, it's ridiculous. That's the whole purpose for the Mad Science Show. You know, there shouldn't be no scales of justice off balance as far as they are. If you live in a house like I live in a house and you have access to things even though you got to pay out to eyeball for it, consider yourself to be one of the fortunate in this world. Because there are individuals out there who haven't never even enjoyed the luxury of being hot in their own house. You know? I'm sitting here, I got a fan on and I'm still sweating and I got a fly coming through that crack in the window or whatever. I'm still doing better than that poor guy in the mud hut. I want that guy in the mud hut to be able to enjoy what I got. You know, fairness around the world, common sense around the world. Stop fighting over oil or resources and use everything that we've been gifted or however you figure we got here. Use it in the most efficient manner in order to make sure that everybody on this planet is cared for. That's the whole key, man. And I want to stick it to the power company because they stuck it to me and my family. You know, I'm still paying an electric bill. When I go off the power grid, it's going to be the same day that everybody else out there has the knowledge on how to do exactly the same. And when I go off the power grid, you can take this to the bank. If you don't ever spread anything that I've ever said in this entire world, spread this one message. When Shaziz goes off the power grid, it's going to make the news. I'm going off the power grid in style. And there ain't going to be one single government entity or anybody out there in this world is going to be able to do anything about it outside of killing me before I get there. Because once it happens, it's going to hit you like a ton of bricks. You ain't going to have the chance to say no. So then you're going to have to write the laws to tell me that I can't no longer do what it is I'm doing. Mark my words, before I die and I go off the power grid for good, I'm going to make the news. That's all there is to it. They'll be talking about it. Because I see what can be done, and my favorite phrase that you keep hearing on there, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Now, if you want to take and have the guts to jump in a spaceship and fly through the vastness of space and visit all the galaxies and meet new people or creatures or adventures, then I'm saying more power to you. I'll see if I can put the batteries together to keep you cool on the way. What do you think, man?
I don't know.
You think this mad science hair came for nothing? Man, tell you what, I believe in peace, hope, and love, and I also believe in possibilities. I believe that if you believe something isn't possible, then you ain't never going to succeed at, you know, so much as even trying it. And there's where I get the biggest part of my frustration, is those who deny it before they try it. Basic science says you can run a car off of water. Alright? Modern science says, oh, we just ain't got there yet. It's not safe. Remember the Hindenburg? Do you remember the Hindenburg? They could have used...
No, I don't remember it. I wasn't there, but I've read about it.
They could have used...
And I've burned some hydrogen, so...
They could have used helium, and they wouldn't have had that tragedy. But instead, they used hydrogen. Some people could have used hot air, because when you heat air, it becomes lighter than the air around it. And so, that's why hot air balloons stay up in the air. As long as you're pulling that little lever that sets the flame up inside that hot air balloon and keeping that air hotter than the surrounding air outside the balloon, it'll float. It's not rocket science. But basic science says you can do it. And yet, here we are, arguing about it. You can't do this because the second law of thermodynamics. Take the laws of physics and stick them in the bookshelf, man. I'm telling you. On one hand, you tell you one thing, and on the other hand, they tell you another thing. It's like talking out the side of their doggone neck. Don't tell me about global warming if you're not willing to listen to a solution. When the BP oil spill was going on, they had tons and tons of people showing all kinds of possibilities, ways that they could absorb that oil and get it out of the water so that it would not create the havoc that it did. I got another comment here. She says, could you use a Tesla coil in reverse if you energize air around the top load to energize the secondary coil, which energizes the primary to get usable electricity? Yeah, sure you can. It's the only thing a doggone Tesla coil is, and I know I'm probably going to get... I'll probably have some sort of Tesla junkie hiding out behind the bush after this show to beat me up as soon as I walk outside to experience nature. But a Tesla coil is an antenna. That's it. It's a transmitter, it's a receiver. There's nothing more fancy about a Tesla coil. As high-tech as all these people want to try to make out like this is, a Tesla coil is an antenna, plain and simple. It's the antenna on your car, it's the antenna down the tower, and even that repeater system out there is a Tesla coil inside there. It's an antenna. It's basically a signal amplifier. That's all it does. Energy travels in waves, and if you want to get it out further, you got to send another wave behind it and ship it out further. If your wave can only go so far, you have to have something that will receive that wave, such as an antenna. That wave will then be turned back into an electrical signal that will be sent out to another transmitter that will relay that on down the line. So essentially all the radio towers that you got out there for your wireless communication, such as your cell phone, are a network of antennas that is taking your signal, picking it up, turning it back into electricity, using that to be amplified over on that other side, sends the signal back out to the next tower, and so on and so forth. That's it. And so, yeah, you can use a Tesla coil forward and backwards. It's an antenna. That's all it is. For everyone out there that wants to get all high-tech about it, you know, there's things you can do with Tesla coils, such as manipulating magnetic fields around there by the frequency range at which you pulse them. It ain't no different than you stomping in a swimming pool or slapping the water, you know, or whatever. Or doing a cannonball off the high dive into the swimming pool. It's what you do with that energy is going to make the difference of the effect that you get out the other side over there, if you understand what I'm trying to say. That's it. And by God, if you ever do what I did at the high dive and do a belly flop off the high dive, you're going to see God. Literally. You're going to see stars. And it, believe it or not, when a 6 foot two man lands flat on the water surface from about 10 or 15 feet in the air, it hurts. Everywhere. But all I did was transfer my energy out there and I got an effect. That's the only thing that's going on. Only thing all these coils and wires are doing is they're railroad tracks. Depending on the size of the railroad tracks, well, depending on the pressure that's going down here. It's no different than a big pipe down to a small pipe. The big pipe carries a lot of current. The small pipe carries a lot of pressure. You get your high voltage with the small pipe. You get your high current with the large pipe. And how you move the energy into each other one is your power source, your generating source. That's it. It's honestly not rocket science, moving energy from point A to point B. What is rocket science is actually understanding what is going on when that magnetic field is actually caught crossing that copper wire and producing a massive amount of voltage, even at a really low RPMs all the way up to high RPMs. You're actually able to produce a frequency that way that will almost act as if not in the Venturi effect. You familiar with the Venturi, Thomas?
You catch me off guard again.
Oh, well, probably boring you to tears too, but in Venturi you got like a Y pipe and one, like a water hose will go in one side, and as that water is being sprayed through straight, it's creating a suction on the other side, which is pulling in more energy. Well, that's essentially what a Tesla coil is doing. It's actually producing a Venturi effect of energy around from the surrounding area. The Van de Graaff generator does it. The Wimshurst, every single static generator out there does it. All generators do it, including the standard generator head out there. If you put your hand in the general vicinity of the spark gap right before that Van de Graaff generator builds up enough charge to literally leap across that gap, right before that discharge, you will actually feel an ionic wind as it is building energy up and literally producing a wind right next to that spark gap. So when you're firing these things up, you're actually drawing energy in from the surrounding air. And the Tesla coil, when you energize the primary, it sends that wave up to secondary. And as the fields are collapsing and interacting with each other, it's actually drawing energy in, and the more energy that finally gets in there, and the pressure builds up on top of that top load, the energy has to go somewhere. And it's going to begin to build up to such an extent that it's literally going to ionize the air around that top load, and once that air is ionized, it essentially creates a path that it can go down. That's why I was saying with that plasma reactor that when I had that argon leak, you got to be careful because that argon gas coming out of there in the stream, electricity can follow that stream. It's conductive. And getting hit in the face with a lightning bolt doesn't sound pleasant. Well, Ryan knows about it. Ryan got hit in the eye with one of his coils that he was messing with. Poor guy, I wouldn't have wanted to have that happen. That must have been a trip. Anyway, we're like down to the last 5 minutes. I mean, I wish this show just could go on forever, but, and again, I hope it doesn't have to go on forever. I hope everybody starts taking all these ideas from one another and running with them, you know? Guys like Jermaine that's getting into alternative energy, those are the future right there, and I'm glad to see him here. I'm glad to see guys like Stephen Givens in the chat room there, always posting links, good links. If you got an opportunity to join us over at shazizradio.com, superchat.html, and just do what we're doing. We talk about things. We post links with each other. We share information. We're trying to network with one another. And we got guys out here that are actually working on projects that we hope to get accomplished. But that's the way it gets done. You know, my YouTube channel, go check it out if you like. There's other links to other YouTube channels, including Jermaine's. Go over there and subscribe to him. Help me support him and get him some viewers out there. That'll give him the motivation to keep going and, you know, maybe be the one to have the last missing piece of the puzzle that you're all looking for. I just want to see it get done, man. Ain't no reason for people to be doing that, doing without in this world. You know, we talk about it on the Knights of the Round Table, making the world a better place. We talk about the positive pebbles in the pond.
You'll solve people not going without a lot faster if you end corruption than you would with energy. There's more energy being lost and wasted due to corruption than there is ever was from the actual science of the system and, you know, the complaints of the laws of thermodynamics.
Well, is there anybody out there studying up how to teach people not to be corrupt? Because I can only do the alternative energy because I understand it mechanically, but as far as being a psychiatrist or whatever, you know, take all the Bilderbergs and have them sit down on the couch, you know, and then, you know, how'd you feel about your mother or your father, you know, try to get down to the brass tacks of why they're, you know, doing what they do. And try to say, look, don't you know that ain't nice or whatever, you're trying to rip somebody off or start all these doggone wars or whatever? And that's just a name that came out of the blue because I've heard of all. The Rothschilds, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, the Freemasons, all that. I've heard of all. I've heard all the conspiracy theories, but I'm no psychiatrist. And I couldn't tell them. I mean, I could tell them from my own point of view that what they're doing is, you know, ridiculous. But they'll walk out the door just like that one politician that came over to my house one time. As I told him, come over, let's have a talk, and I'll tell you how to get elected. Well, he walked out of my house and went on down the road and did totally the opposite, and he did not get elected. Nobody wants to elect a nobody that ain't got millions of bucks, you know. Nobody who's in the seat of power, that is, because we all know it's a sham. But in order to get around the sham, in order for us to take back control of our countries and our freedoms and stuff like that, we actually got to get up off the couch and start networking. It's as simple as that. Anyway, we're down to it, brother. Do you got any last words of advice?
No, you just stormed the words right out of my mouth, man. Networking.
All right, yep, that's the key right there.
That'll help with the corruption, too, because it's kind of hard to be a jerk to somebody that you actually empathize with. You go out there and network with people, you get to know their point of view, get to actually feel how they feel, walk in their shoes for a minute, even if it's just, you know, vicariously.
Yep.
Suddenly it's a little harder to be, you know, being asked to them.
And don't support those systems that you don't agree with, plain and simple.
Yep. Find any way you can out of it, man. Even if you have to spend more money than you'd save on your taxes, on a CPA to beat those taxes, I'd rather give that CPA the money than that, you know, certified public accountant the money than give Uncle Sam the money if they're not going to do what I want them to do with my money.
Yep, I agree. They're supposed to be representatives. Hold your feet to the fire. Anyway, yep. Folks, that's it. We're going to run slightly over, playing ourselves up out of here if we don't hurry. So with that said, thanks, Thomas, and thanks, everybody, for listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Good God willing, if everything goes well and we get there, so we'll try to get there, and hopefully you'll join us in on the Knights of the Round Table, and then that way we can hear from you as well. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.